Can you judge a book by its cover? The way people see and judge us is often based on the first thing they see, our faces. And while your face may not be a good indicator of your personality or abilities, for centuries, culture and pseudoscience have ascribed outsized meaning to those few square inches that you present to the world. In the new book, The Language of the Face, Stories of Its Uniquely Expressive Features, Frank Gonzalez-Cruci offers a broad history of physiognomy, the belief that our looks have more than just superficial meaning. Frank is a professor emeritus at Northwestern University's Medical School, where he specialized in pediatric pathology, and he's the author of 22 books in both English and Spanish. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hello, everyone. I am Frank Gonzalez-Cruci, the author of The Language of the Face, a book of essays centered upon the face and its amazing capacity for expression. During many years, I was a pathologist at Northwestern University Medical School. And now, as a pathologist, the human body and its many organic problems were my main professional preoccupation. I can truly say that everything that I have ever written has to do with the human body. Therefore, it was inevitable that sooner or later I should focus my attention on the face, which is a singularly meaningful part of the body. It has been said that no part of the anatomy engrosses a larger share of our thoughts and emotions than the face. It is a small percentage of our anatomy, just a few square inches in extension, yet these few square inches hold the key to much of what happens to us in our lives. In my book, I develop some of the many ideas suggested by the singular nature of the face. My specific aim was to pass on some information and at the same time to amuse the reader. I will now summarize in five key points a few of these ideas and reflections. Key point number one. For millennia, people have had the desire to discover what relation may exist between character, temperament, and outward facial appearance. It is almost instinctive to assume that there must be a direct relationship. We see someone for the first time, and we cannot avoid the tendency to feel attracted or repulsed by that person. Sometimes we say to ourselves, this man looks devious. He must be tricky, cunning, or sly. Alternatively, we may think, this woman has a frank, open face. She seems trustworthy. And much of what we do in life is based on those first impressions. Historically, there was a serious attempt to create a science based on such observations. All efforts in this regard have failed thus far. The Language of the Face is not an academic book on the history of physiognomy. Rather, it takes a light and sometimes humorous view of some of the failed attempts to create the scientific basis of physiognomy. The physiognomists of the past conferred a great value to the shape of the nose in their attempts to guess an individual's psychic constitution. Their basic premises were mistaken, but the shape of the nose has nonetheless played a major role in individual human lives, to wit, the abhorrent myth of the so-called Jewish nose, which became a matter of life and death for the unfortunates who, regardless of their ethnicity and whether they were Jewish or non-Jewish, they were judged to have such a nose by ignorant and fanatic authorities obfuscated by the Nazi ideology. A chapter of my book is devoted to stories and anecdotes about the inconsistencies, irrationalities, and odd behaviors originated in or related to the nasal shape. The loss of the nose by traumatic amputation used to take part in consequence of sword or saber slashes when duels were the fashion. Or in some countries, the penalty dictated by law for some crimes, most notably adultery. Nasal loss is the source of moving, dramatic stories as well as humorous, entertaining narratives. I review examples of both in my book, and I discuss the interesting treatments that historically were used by surgeons to correct the deformity of nasal amputation. The aim of my book, I repeat, is dual: to entertain and to convey some information. One chapter of my book deals with the question of what constitutes an attractive face. I review the measurements and the geometric criteria that have been thought to produce beauty in a face. The conclusion is that these criteria are applicable to photographs or two-dimensional representations, but in a living, animated, motile, three-dimensional human face, many other factors contribute to make a beautiful face. Now, a beautiful face is known from the remotest antiquity to be a cause for falling in love. This gave me a pretext to spice my narrative, talking about what people have tried to do to fall out of love. In other words, the chapter includes a digression on the remedies of love. Here I make reference to the famous Leucadian leap. There was the method used by ancient Greeks. The disappointed lover threw himself or herself from a great height into the ocean. The shock cured many lovers of their obsession. This highly effective method had a minor inconvenience. The lover could lose his life together with his passion. I discuss all the treatments that are less ancient, but certainly not less colorful. Key point number 4. The lips are a major constituent of facial physiognomy. There was a time when physicians observed meticulously the lip movements as part of their diagnostic workup. The so-called sardonic smile was believed to have a high diagnostic value in some diseases. Because its verbal description was very difficult, some clinicians referred to classical paintings which they believed graphically depicted the features of that smile. So readers of this chapter will see an example of how clinical medicine before photography used classical pictorial art as a form of medical illustration. But the lips are also the instruments of kissing, and readers will also find a highly entertaining explanation due to a philosopher of the Italian Renaissance about how a passionate erotic kiss causes the strong emotional impact, the indescribable thrill that countless men and women have experienced since the earliest times of recorded history. Key point number 5. The eyes are said to be the windows of the soul. They should always occupy a prominent place in any discussion of physiognomy. But what happens when they are disordered or hampered or in any way dysfunctional? I reviewed the astonishment accomplishment of men whose intellectual or artistic productions are the just cause of admiration in the world, despite the total loss of their eyesight. In particular, I briefly recount the lives of some outstanding blind sculptors. For this chapter, I also researched the old superstition of the evil eye. What kind of abnormal eyes were supposed to produce this malignant gaze, and how the abnormalities of those eyes are explained in light of modern concepts of ophthalmology. I also tell in this chapter how this superstition has persisted and actually still thrives in full force, with plenty of quaint, picturesque anecdotes in present-day Neapolitan culture. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Frank. That was Frank Gonzalez-Cruci with five big ideas from The Language of the Face, stories of its uniquely expressive features. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.